seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello there. You're welcome along to Golf Weekly. We apologise we haven't been around in some time. Been a busy few weeks. Nathan Murphy alongside me. Hello.
How are you?
And Peter Lawrie. Hello.
Hello, Joe.
We have much to discuss, as you might imagine. We may or may not be joined by Brooks Koepka's caddy, Ricky Elliott, over the next hour or so. We're playing it by ear. If he answers his phone, we'll stick him on. If he doesn't, we'll get him again.
I like how you did that. We may or may not be joined by Brooks Koepka. Caddy.
Well, if it was horse racing now, we've got the caddy, and that's all that matters, isn't it? We've got the jockey.
Portrush native, good golfer in his own right.
Very good, yeah.
Almost made it as a pro, very close.
Very close in the era of Brian Freese.
Graham McDowell.
Thank you very much.
The Ulster Boys Championship and the Ulster Youth Championship, and represented Ireland at the 1990 European Youth Championships.
Yes.
That was his era. And then he was at the University of Toledo on a golf scholarship, and then ultimately didn't make it as a pro and became an assistant professional at Lake Nona in Orlando. Started working as a caddy. Worked for Ben Curtis for a while. And then 2013, some young kid, Claude Harmon, called him over, said, this guy's worth a look.
They had experimented with a few caddies with Brooks. They had Ricky Roberts on the bag for a while.
Okay.
And one or two others. And really just trying to find a fit for him.
Mm.
And especially when he was travelling around playing Challenge Tour in Europe and stuff like that, they were trying to get somebody, you know, that was kind of, could help him out. And Ricky seemed to fit the picture very well. And they became very, very good friends, I believe.
Did you want your caddy to be a good golfer? How big an asset do you think it is for a caddy to have been close to being able to go pro?
I think it's a big asset, but the more the asset is the fact that yes, they can hit the shots, or yes, they can see the same shots that you might see, rather than somebody else coming up and saying, you know, I think it's X because it's like, there was a caddy on tour who used to do it mathematically, and he would say every shot goes at a certain height, so therefore I can work out, you know, how strong the wind is and how strong it's going to affect it. But golf is not like that. You know what I mean? We all see different shots. Take, for example, Brooks' shot into, was it 15 or 14 last week when he hit the 8-iron over the green?
Mm.
You know, he was trying to control the shot down.
Mm.
So
that was a moment when he airmailed that one. Uh-oh.
Yeah, I was going to...
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I was hoping to ask Ricky about that one. Did you think, uh-oh?
I never felt he wasn't going to win this.
I had a deep faith that Dustin Johnson would hit the eject button as soon as he realised he was in the tournament.
I didn't think that either. I just thought that Koepka, even though I've seen Ricky Elliott say he's never seen Koepka look as nervous,
yeah,
I just didn't feel as though he was falling apart.
No, I agree.
I didn't think
he
was standing on 15th tee going, oh my God, this is going to be the greatest collapse in the history. I don't think that...
Yeah, I think the conditions did more to that than anything else. It was just really, really tough conditions.
And it's so easy to make a bogey out there. Mm. You don't have to do much wrong to suddenly be 3-4 bogeys on.
No.
Ricky Elliott's a good golfer. Did he ever win the Irish Close Championship is what I'm wondering, though.
Don't think so.
No.
Oh, look at that.
Look at that.
Wow.
I was playing golf out in Newlands Golf Club yesterday evening.
Oh, yeah.
And lo and behold, whose picture is up on the wall.
Look at that beauty.
But a young Peter Lawrie, and they take great pride out in Newlands of all that Peter has achieved.
Look at that, Jack. What's that, an extra large? And you're a bit of medium?
Exactly. I was a small, and that was probably a double XL.
What age are you there?
Having a clue.
I only brought that up, by the way, so I could mention, Joe, that I've played my first golf of the year.
Oh, yeah, good.
So I played out in Powerscourt Monday, Media Cup, myself, Kilban, Johnny McCann, who was in here, Charlie from upstairs, and I stunk the joint out. Perfect conditions, course sensational, and it was embarrassing.
Okay.
And then I had to go and play Newlands yesterday with a friend of mine who I'd never played with before. He's the father of one of my kids' best friends.
Oh.
Plays off 8.
You know him well?
Not really.
Oh.
Like, know him to...
Sure.
Like, well, I only know him for the last couple of months.
You don't want to make a fool of yourself.
And we chatted a bit of golf, and he was like, I should come out and play. And I got to know that he played quite a bit of golf, and he had two other members from Newlands, Jim and Jimmy. Jimmy, who's a friend of the pod.
Doing Jimmy
was playing, as well, and they were all good golfers.
Great.
And I was shitting myself because all I'm thinking is, I'm going to humiliate myself.
Did you think he wouldn't let his son be friends with your son after this?
Well, this is what's at stake. This is what's at stake. I honestly, at the first tee, I'm like, please God, just hit it straight.
Yeah.
Please God, get it past the ladies' tee.
Yeah.
Sure enough, I actually didn't play that bad.
First fairway.
Two birdies.
Oh, go away.
Two birdies. Lovely little five.
Good on you.
I'd say a 5-footer among the par threes for birdie.
Good. Did you try and play it cool?
Of course I did. Like this. That other stuff, that doesn't happen. This happens all the time.
Good on you. Good man. I mean, he'll find out the truth eventually, but at least first impression's important.
Well, this is...
Bob Dwyer, then, to get to your tweets. Just saw Kevin and Nathan, I presume that's Kilban and Murphy, walking down Wicklow Street a few moments ago. This was...
This morning.
3 hours ago. I said to Nathan I was a friend of the pod, as opposed to telling Zinedine Kilban just how much of a legend he was. Golf has me now, he says.
I won't lie. Made my day.
I'd say Kilban was disgusting.
Kilban was... There was a moment's doubt of, wait a second, did this guy actually not recognise? Or was he doing what... the column was actually doing, which was, he knew who Kilban was, but was just sort of taking the piss out of Kilban.
Kilban, it's easy to be the nice guy when everyone's licking your arse.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the real world now.
It's like, oh, just because for once I'm not the one taking the photo of you and somebody. Can't hack it.
Patrick Ryan sent a picture of his 5-wood. He said, I love this 5-wood. It's been in the bag since 2003. I've changed every other club a few times over the years. Anyone else have a club they just love and hit well for over a decade? # friend of the pod. Peter?
Used to have a 3-wood in the bag that used to last a long, long time. I used to be quite similar to Henrik Stenson. I loved my 3-wood. Didn't really fancy the driver, but 3-wood was my club.
I was looking at Kepka's clubs. He still has like the M2 range of the tailor-made versions. He's got an M5 driver and an M2 3-wood, and he's got like Vapor irons. He's all over the shop. He seems to not have a club manufacturer.
Yeah, Mizuno irons.
Mizuno, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Nokia wedges.
Yeah.
Once he left Nike,
yeah, everybody moved away from next year Nike. And then you're open to using whatever clubs you want.
Mm.
Why don't club manufacturers go away, and maybe this is happening, maybe TaylorMade are paying them £1 million a year to use their driver, or is that not the case? Unless you go all out exclusive, are you just not going to make any money?
TaylorMade will pay for the driver all right, big time, but after that there's very few manufacturers out there, unless you're going to use all their equipment, as in 12 clubs, they'll give you 2 club leeway, use the bag and wear the hat, there's no real money in it. So the guys are nearly better off. Brooks having a Nike contract, he has Nike bag, doesn't he? He has Nike hats, clothes, Nike clothes.
Yeah.
But there's no clubs anymore.
What do we think of the Nike hats with the Nike written on it?
Yeah, I like this.
It grew on me.
Did it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You? No?
Like yourself, it had to grow on me.
Yeah.
Initially I thought,
No, I came to like it. Sheelan Strain says, if you look closely, oh yeah, she was playing in Ballyliffin. He was on the par 3, the 7th. If you look closely, you can see the helicopter taking Tiger Woods to Ballyliffin on Saturday morning. Was this true?
Not a chance. No. Not a chance.
Well, even the timeline didn't stack up.
No.
Because Tiger didn't finish till late on Friday night when he missed the cut.
Right.
Also said he was feeling a bit under the weather. And then I wake up the next morning, 8 hours later, and there's a photo of him coming out of a helicopter in Ballyliffin.
On Tiger, Joe LaCava said on the 18th on the Friday and on the 14th, Tiger came out of the shot. And he said, you never see Tiger Woods do this. And he just said the back probably wasn't quite right, or the body wasn't quite right, was what he was alluding to. Definitely this week, copper fast in the sense that Tiger's going to rock up at majors now and there'll be a question mark over the body. There'll be good weeks and bad weeks. It seemed to be not a great week.
It's a cold weather week, isn't it? Once the cold weather comes in, he's snookered.
Wouldn't say he loved that rough either.
Well, no. Pebble will be a cold weather week as well, won't
it? Yeah, and the Open, so really...
But can he, say, at Portrush and maybe at Pebble Beach as well, can he not manage his way around the course? Was that not the problem here, that actually he needed to eke out every ounce of power that he had to somehow stay in contention? And he knew that, and he's forcing himself to go too far. Whereas actually at Augusta, he was able to play smarter golf?
At Augusta still, though, you have to get it out there. Mm. You know, to go in with, to go into the greens with, you know, medium irons to get some control out of the ball. No, I'd agree with you somewhat that he can get around some golf courses, but with the bad weather, he seems to kind of, everything, you know, closes up and he's not as free as you would expect him to be.
Yeah. I played Portrush a couple of weeks ago, courtesy of Northern Ireland Tourism. It was an amazing day. What struck me about it, and we'll talk more in good time, was a lot of elevated greens.
Yes.
it didn't strike me as the kind of course where you could, from rough or from dodgy positions, hook one around a corner and bump it up and run it onto the green. You're actually going to need to drive the ball very well. You'll need to be in a reasonable fairway position to land the ball on the green. That's what struck me. I don't know if that's if that'll be the same for the pros.
You know, Portrush is normally you're quite high up off the tee. You're hitting down onto the fairway quite a lot,
and then back.
So you're visually, you know, you can see all the rubbish, you know, left and right, and then as you said, you're hitting back up onto it.
Yeah.
So there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah. No. It's going to be fantastic. My God, it looks amazing. Gavin Ryan says, "Hope you enjoyed the media day at Paris Court Golf. Beware of Johnny McCann after seeing him eagle the second. You could be in trouble playing against him."
Didn't eagle the second on Monday, I can tell you.
Good. Although Emmett Kane heard Johnny McCann on a few weeks ago and he said, "Just finished the latest Golf Weekly OTB." I think that was back in May 1st, unfortunately. "In this age of inclusion and diversity, the last segment with Johnny McCann during 10 minutes of exemplary workplace bullying was a wonderful kickback against the liberal agenda. Keep it up, lads. Hashtag harassment." Dave Farrell says, "Can we take the PGA Championship to Hilton Head next year? Be far more interesting." Might as well talk about the course now briefly. I mean, you're mentioning the 14th and 15th holes there as if that means anything to me. It's the same hole over and over again, no? Was it not all just one 480-yard par four after another?
Well, yeah, pretty much. Okay, I'd agree with you there, but yeah, I was just mentioning the par three. Was that
not a dreadful golf course?
It's an exceptionally difficult golf course. It's a bit like Carnoustie.
No, I got that.
Was it not just a dreadful golf course because it was not a dramatic 3 days and all anyone really cared about was what Koepka was doing after the first?
Would you remember a single hole?
No.
Was the rough not too high and too much of a leveller?
Well, hold on a second. Here's a guy, Rich Beam, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't play very much golf at all.
Yeah.
He shot 269s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the golf course was very playable.
Yeah.
And for a guy who doesn't hit it very far anymore. So I don't think you can say that the golf course was overpowering in relation to the players. Like, if Rich Beam can shoot 269s, the golf course is very... And that's no disrespect to Rich Beam.
No, I know what you're saying. Why was it so turgid then to watch? And not just Brooks Koepka's runaway sense. It was just like a grind. I don't know why I didn't enjoy it, but I really distinctly didn't enjoy this course.
Possibly because you don't know it.
Go on.
You know, you're not familiar with it. Mm-hmm. Like, you're very familiar with the Masters. You'd be quite familiar with an open golf course. Or even a US Open style golf course. PGA, you're normally kind of, you're used to seeing, the Island Green in Sawgrass, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where they used to play it.
I'm not sure though. I mean, no? I wasn't familiar really with Erin Hills or Shinnecock in recent years and loved it. Chambers Bay in its own grim kind of way, I thought it was really fascinating. I just thought I was pretty bored of watching pros hacking the ball 120 yards out of rough. It just didn't do anything for me as a spectacle. I thought it was just set up to be turgid kind of golf.
As a pro, I hate those type of golf courses. I really do. You know, that where you've no kind of escape from them. You know what I mean? You have to hit driver.
Mm.
You know, if you miss the fairway, it's a hack out. It's just hardship.
Yeah.
You know, from start to finish. And you're expecting hardship from the very first tee as you go out. Like, I watched that first tee shot and it looked awfully difficult. You know what I mean? Fairway going left to right.
Funny enough.
You're hitting over.
That was the kind of difficult I enjoyed.
Right.
Like, I thought the first hole was a really great hole.
Mm.
Because Koepka was coming out and showing how birdieable it was if you hit a good tee shot.
Yeah, but he was carrying it over.
Yeah, I know he was. Yeah.
Molinari's pretty much out of bounds off the first.
But even Zach Johnson was able to put his ball within 160, 140, 150 of the green.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is interesting. Okay, it's like Johnson can compete here with Koepka. Mm-hmm. Whereas I thought, like, Johnson and Koepka five holes on, Zach, you might as well go home here.
The familiarity with a lot of these major championship courses that we don't see too often comes from watching it Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. And by Sunday night, you have a memory of the bit of drama on Friday night or Saturday night. But all that you remember is Koepka, fairway, green, fairway, green.
Yeah.
He was so far ahead, there was no drama behind, there was nothing memorable that happened for anybody aside from Koepka.
And
unfortunately, that's almost all his majors.
That's true. I do appreciate that, like, on a Sunday, if it was really close, then suddenly the drama of finding the rough off your tee becomes, ooh, and it's, you know, full of tension, and it's great. I accept that a closer tournament could have made the course seem more enjoyable, but I just thought it was bit dull. I just didn't think it made for a great tournament. Maybe I'm totally wrong.
No, I think you're up there all right. You have a point.
Brian Hegarty wants to know, who's the exaggerated Australian commentator on Sky who said he's hit that left into the jungle where the elephants go to die about Werner's shot on the fort? I would presume Wayne Riley. That has Wayne Riley written all over
it,
doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Poor old Harold Varner had a bit of a mare.
Oh, poor Harold. I mean, if Ricky Elliott was on, and I'd say at this stage we'll get him again, time-wise, but it can't help you when he's having a stinker beside you on the Sunday.
No.
When he's shooting 81.
The only good part of it was Brooks was up the tee, was up most holes, you know, teeing off first.
Okay.
But if you had to watch that and then guide against it, then you're struggling.
Right.
But at least you're up on the tee, you've hit your shot, and then whatever he does after that, really, you don't care.
He was speaking afterwards, Harold Varner, and he said, "I thought it was pretty weird how the whole crowd were telling Brooks to choke. Not my cup of tea. I was pulling for him after that." What do you think of the New York fans?
As a one-off, is it that right. big an issue? No. Like, it was hilarious because the second
DJ,
it went
DJ.
Down to one. Yeah, and they're all you can hear them, choke, choke, choke. I'm like, bloody hell, this is great.
It's so cruel.
It's terribly cruel. Like, maybe you wouldn't like to see it every week.
But, you know, I to be honest with you, I don't like it at all. You know,
I
don't
boorish,
like it at all.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, golf tournaments really have to look at the alcohol situation on tournaments. Like, European Tour this week, which is amazing, are making the players walk from one green through a tent, the Heineken tent, to the next hole. Like, A, are we promoting alcohol? And B, are we promoting, you know, guys getting drunk or girls getting drunk and shouting at the players? Mm. Like, what is it all about?
Money.
Money, I would think.
But it's wrong.
Well, yeah, it's hard to argue.
And then they're going to have a Ryder Cup here. How bad is that going to be? Imagine Monty playing the Ryder Cup. Imagine the abuse that he'd get.
So we're delighted to welcome to the pod, Ricky Elliott. You're there.
Yes.
Hi, Ricky.
How's it going?
Very good. Did we get you up out of bed?
I was actually messing around there, and yeah. No, it's only 8:30 here. I'm up. I've already been to the gym twice and stuff like that.
Jesus. Do caddies go to the gym these days?
No.
I don't think so.
We still do the same stuff. Don't worry about that.
All right. You just watch the players go to the gym instead.
We do. Yeah. It's got to save our energy, don't we?
You certainly do.
Well, first of all, congratulations. I would presume this is getting a bit surreal now. Four majors, that's getting a bit silly.
Yeah, it's a little bit mad, to be honest. Never expected myself to be in this situation at all. Watched some great golf the last 2 years and mammoth performances. And yeah, it's actually hard to believe. It really hasn't sunk in.
Are you surprised the way it's gone in the last 2 years? You've obviously been with Brooks for 5-6 years at this stage, and he was a top level golfer at that stage, but even with all the talent that you'd seen over those first 2-3 years together, are you still taken aback by just how much he's achieved over the last 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're both a little surprised. You know, he's obviously peaked at the right times, and you know, I don't think Tiger, you know, you need a great deal of luck and good timing to win, as you guys know, and it's really just fallen in their lap in those events. And, you know, probably I would have expected them to probably have won 6 times in the last 2 years because he's that good. But the fact that 4 of them are majors, I don't know whether that's just a bit of good fortune and the timing or what, but for them to be majors is surprising, to win 4 majors.
What's your relationship with him on the course? Is he serious? Is he talkative? Does he like a quiet round? Because we watch him and you wouldn't say he's massively expressive, and sometimes it's hard to get a feel for him as a personality.
Yeah, I mean, I spend a fair amount of time with him off the course as well. I mean, he's one of the lads. You know, like as Peter knows, in Europe you go out to dinner and you do that. He still does all that stuff. Whereas I think a lot of American lads wouldn't. And on the course, we just chat about regular stuff. Very, very little chat about the golf going down the holes or anything, where you'd be picking out like some of the idiots last week in the crowd. You know, we'd be laughing at them. We'd be just doing regular stuff. And yeah, his exterior looks that it wouldn't be much fun, but to be totally honest, he's as normal as it gets. He's not hard to get on with at all.
Yeah.
How bad were the shouts on Sunday evening when they were shouting out DJ, DJ, and then choke? Jesus.
I know, yeah, there was a lot of that, to be honest. Even on Friday, we were late out there with Tiger on Friday, and, you know, Brooks was kind of running away with it. He probably had a 6-7 shot lead in the field, and he was probably, I don't know, what was he, 14 or 15 shots better than Tiger, and I suppose 95% of the crowd were pulling for him. So, yeah, I mean, Friday afternoon might have been worse. Every time he stood over a shot, there was somebody shouting out, shank it, or duff it, or hit it in the bunker, man, or something like that there. So we already had our dose of that. So whenever it came around to... Whenever he airmailed the green in 14 and there was a big cheer up in 15 for Dustin to pull a shot clear, it was pretty bad. I kind of for the first time sort of felt sorry for him, and we had a good chat going to the next hole, and, you know, like I said, I was trying to explain to him they're not actually against you. They just now see a ball game, you know what I mean? It's the first time it's been tight, and they're looking for not that Dustin's an underdog, but they've now all of a sudden got excited and they're wanting Dustin to pull level. Like, if you're a neutral in any sport and the game gets tight at the end after somebody having a big lead, I think that's more that was going on, but we probably should have kept it a little quieter, yeah.
Yeah, that's... probably very good advice to give him, because it would be very easy for... I mean, he's still a young man, and you can personalise that very easily, and it must be a horrible atmosphere to play in. In the midst of that bogey run, are you talking to him about the tournament and, look, you know, we'd have taken this on a Thursday, we're just one shot, we're, you know, one or two shots ahead, few holes to go, and let's get into strategy, or... you know, and focusing on what's going on, or are you talking to him about anything but the golf and about last night's football? How did you handle him?
In that case, it was you sort of start talking about general stuff whenever things are going good, but something had to be said. We weren't going to not talk to each other and talk about random stuff whenever we had a crisis in our hands, you know? So we had to talk about it, and, like, there were 35 mile an hour of gusts. You know, it was blowing 15 to 20 with 35 mile an hour gusts. And even the 11th hole, which was a drive and a wedge all week, I mean, 11, 12 was off the left. 13 was a 600 and something yard par. 12 was a 525 yard par 4. There were kind of par 5s in. They were kind of par 5s anywhere, and 13 might have been a par 6. So it was like the first three bogeys weren't like... I know he didn't hit great shots, but it wasn't. It could have happened on the practice round. You know what I mean? It wasn't. It wasn't actually a choke. He just didn't hit good drives. And, you know, when he bogeyed that one, and then we airmailed another, I just kept on saying to him, "Just keep grinding. We're still in the lead. He's still got tough holes to go as well." Dustin had his little run. He made a really good par in 12. He made a really good par in 13. Obviously, par 14 and any birdie at the hardest hole in the course, 15 to get within one. But, like, he still had three really hard holes to go as well, and we still had a one-shot lead. So he had to. I was just trying to take his mind off the fact that he was still winning, or on the fact that he was still winning, and he still had to catch you in a very tough course. And really, that's all I said to him. I just kept on saying, "You're still in the lead. Let's go. You're still in the lead. You're still in the lead. Forget about everything else. You know, just regular stuff. The stuff that you'd be expected to hear, you know." So
yeah.
Do you do much work in advance, Ricky, over the years as to how you handle situations like that? I know, Peter, you've spoken before of the last thing a player ever wants to see is if you're going down the stretch and you're nervous and you look across at your caddy and they're nervous. Like, is there work you can do on your own mental side of the game? I know Brooks says he doesn't really dip into it, but that in these times of what from the outside looks like crisis, like looks like it might be a collapse, as to making sure that you say the right thing at the right time, or is it just more instinctive on the day?
Well, I think just, and as Peter knows, he's a long-term caddies as well. I just know him so well. You nearly know when he's going to hit a bad shot. You nearly can tell when he's takes that extra shuffle going into a shot or a putt or something. So once you start to know the person, the guy you're working for, and his body language is changing, then you know when to say something, you know. And that was one of those cases. And, you know, it looked like his head was getting down. It looked like he was back in the corner and somebody was just punching him. So, you know, around 13, 14, he didn't know what was going on. And the crowd were after him. So, yeah, it was just about staying positive with him. And like Peter alluded to there at some point, that you didn't want, my head wasn't going to go down, you know, because he's the only guy you got out there. So I was trying to keep on doing the same things, trying to make sure to just say the same things and, you know, give off the vibe that I wasn't nervous. And yeah.
Yeah, like I've always said, Ricky, you know, caddies are like jockeys and players are like horses. You know what I mean? You just need to sort of, you know, get your player to, you know, blinkers on and beat the shit out of him to get him to the line. You know what I mean? And get the whip out and whip him if you have to, and then just leave him alone. One of my best caddies and I had for a long time was Dermot Byrne. And Dermot Byrne probably got the best out of me because he used to whip me. You know what I mean? Yeah. He used to sit on you. And I've said this an awful lot of times. The caddies are one of the most important people out there. Never mind your mind coaches or your swing coaches or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a good man in the bag, you're dead. And this was my point, and I've made this quite a few times, Ricky, on this show, is in relation to some of the top guys. You know, I'm not saying that they have poor caddies in the bag, but just a caddy is frightened to taking out a whip and whipping their player into position. You know, and you know, our own, you know, Rory McIlroy, as we've said, and don't get me wrong, I've nothing against Harry Diamond in any shape or form, but I just feel that, you know, sometimes that he needs a whip, and he needs a whip in the right direction. And funny enough, it just depends. I know your character, I know Dermot's character, I know Brian Martin, who caddied for me before, now caddying for Shane. You know, they just stand up and they say it as it is. They're not frightened of their player in any shape or form. And, you know, you said there, you know, you told Brooks exactly what you thought. Dermot used to tell me, Brian used to tell me, and he's probably now telling Shane the same thing. Like, you know, stop this crazy thought. Get back on and do what you have to do. And I think you just proved the point there that the caddy is one of the most vital components of a professional golfer.
Yeah, I mean, like we know our role, and like, to be honest, like I say, that like you can play the first two rounds and it's fine, whatever, you know, but really, like, and you've won tournaments, beat a lot of tournaments, and going down the stretch, you lose your mind. The golfer tends to lose their mind, especially if there's a lot of what happened there on Sunday. They start saying silly things, you know, like, do you think I should knock down a little six instead? You know, they're starting to play a little scared, and you're like, no, just hit your regular shot, hit a seven iron, what are you even thinking? You know what I mean? So it's just the way, I guess, you deliver it, and, you know, your voice, you got to be more, you know, like, more convincing than ever before, you know, you can't have any nervousness in your voice, or pretend that you're worried and stuff. So, but yeah, especially trying to win, you know, they can cruise into a 54 hole lead, and then the final round, if they see a little bit of, you know, wobbling in you, I suppose it gives off the vibe that, oh well, if he's worried, I should be worried, sort of thing. So yeah, I mean, that's the only thing I try and do in the final rounds is try and be even more upbeat than the days before, and no matter what happens out there, just try and stay on a level keen. I mean, the guys have all the talent, but you've got to keep an eye on them and just make sure that they're doing the exact same things, whether it's they're walking too fast, whether they're playing too fast. And I know in Brooks's case, whenever he's a little worried, he'll walk a little quicker. I think that's what generally a lot of the lads do, or they'll be too, you know, where did that go, or, you know, or they'll play the shot too fast because they're a little nervous or something. But it's just for you to keep an eye on all that and tell them, listen, we need to slow down here, or, you know, if he's hit a bad shot, try and take the club back off him and wipe it and start again and make sure he knows that he's moved on to the next shot. Just little things, you get to know your man, and that's really all a caddy can do.
Ricky, you might give us an insight into his game and how easy he is to caddy or otherwise, like in terms of his distances between different irons. Are they all pretty much locked in? Like, does he always hit the fade? It looks on the Pro Tracer like it's just that baby fade every time. Does he ever hit a draw? Could you give us an insight into his game?
I think, yeah, I mean, when he's swinging really good, he hits a little fade. And whenever he comes to the course, and it, like you know, Pete, it changes every week. Like, sometimes he just can't get into that position and he's forced into just feeling like he's going to hit a little draw. His iron game, he would sort of draw his short irons and fade his longer irons just with that sort of closed move and hold off angle. His irons are probably, you know, for a big hitter, it starts being 14 or 15 yards between every iron, which is
a lot.
Is a lot. I mean, that's something that people don't realise in big hitters, that is a little bit of a down. Like, not saying hitting the ball's not an advantage, but they're always in between. They're in between clubs more. So,
right.
So over the last sort of 2 years, we've worked a lot on sort of three-quarter shots, controlling the flight, doing the stuff that like a big hitter really should always be doing, and trying to work on a, you know, a little knockdown shot and, you know, take the spin off and stuff like that. There's stuff that maybe the shorter hitters, it just comes naturally to them because there's maybe only an 8-10 difference between their wedge and their 9, not 15.
Yeah.
And really that's what he's worked hard on, just controlling flight. So, doing things like that.
He didn't control it too well going into 14 the other day.
No.
That was your fault, was it?
Did you get the look?
Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah. if he had lost the PGA, I would have been like... But the funny thing is, we had 150 yards and the back of the green was 170, and we played the last three holes in the 35-mile-an-hour wind. I mean, we've been playing 30 yards of wind, like two clubs at least, and that little hole is going the same direction, but we always know that it's a little bit, it's in the trees, it's going the same direction, but Harry Varner hit one in the air, and he was sort of hitting his short irons nearly as far as Brooks all day, and his went up into the wind and fell down short into the bunker. So I just tried to play the back yardage, thinking that it would come up 15 yards short of the back of the green, at least if the wind didn't catch it, you know. And he's hit this thing. It's nearly 150 yards, and he's just tried to chip at 165, and it's just went straight through the wind and flew the back somehow. But, you know, that was obviously a little bit of adrenaline and the wind dying. I'm not... Probably my fault as well.
Not, did you get the look, Ricky? Did he turn around and give you the look?
I thought he looked shocked on TV more than anything. On TV, he was almost open mouthed.
That was the thing. Like, that's what's brilliant about him. He kind of got on with it. He just said, "Oh man, that wind died down, and I must have hit that too hard." He's brilliant. I mean, he never gives me much grief at all. And you know what? It wasn't a 9-iron either. He just said he just smashed it, and he hit nearly a full 8-iron instead of a little take-off one. And, you know, Harry's shot sort of put us off a little bit because, I mean, it was one of those ones you could nearly have run and caught Harry's ball, you know, once it rode up into the wind, and Brooks just went straight through it like a dart, and we're just looking at each other going, where the hell did that go? Like,
yeah.
But
Ricky, We were just talking about you before you came on, and obviously you were a very good player in your own right and probably had dreams of making it on the pro circuit, and then you end up in this incredibly precarious profession, and we know how difficult caddying could be, and now this has happened, you know. And like, I'm always obsessed with money, so I'm working out the percentages of what Brooks Koepka's won, and I'm thinking and just for you, like, I don't know, do you family, I don't know much about your kind of personal situation, but you're out there, like, this must be the most surreal thing for you. This has changed your life, I presume, what's going on right now. This must be unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I live over here in my own. My family still lives in Port Rush. So, yeah, I'm over here, sort of no family and stuff, and running around the tour after him. And you know what? It's sort of a family out there. I love doing what I'm doing and things like that. There's, you know, you get runs as a caddy, you get runs as a player. I never thought I'd end up with a guy like this and having such a good run. Mm. But yeah, the money's one thing, but I mean, being a golf fan like you guys are, like, I'm not going to say the money doesn't matter, but you would swap a hell of a lot of it just to be walking down the final hole with a guy that's one of your best friends winning a major, you know, just for the history of it and things like that. That definitely doesn't get too old. And, you know, I know I'm in an unbelievably privileged position to be doing it, just to have that insight on somebody doing it so often and becoming the best in the world. And, you know, over the last 6 years, it's just been incredible to watch. That would be the biggest high out of it. And then obviously the money is, I mean, you know, we're grossly overpaid when it comes to things like that there for whenever I don't have any skill in my little left finger, you know what I mean? So it's that's particularly nice. I would say that the biggest high I get out of it's just watching him doing what he's doing and being part of his team and seeing him do that, you know.
And being such good friends, I guess he didn't have an issue with you trying to renegotiate where you get 15% from the majors and 5% from everything else.
I'll leave that to you. I'll split the difference with you if you can.
Ricky, I would be probably one of the few players to say that most caddies don't get paid enough. There's some caddies out there who probably get paid too much, but the top guys don't get paid enough.
Yeah.
Because they're worth their weight in gold at the right moment.
Yeah.
Ricky, it did feel as though this major, incredibly, it took four for the sporting world, to properly wake up to what a talent Brooks Koepka was, probably because of the way he played those 54 holes. And even Rory McIlroy was talking about it afterwards. It'll be interesting to see what happens next, that he's going to be very much in demand, that everyone will want a little bit of his time. He'll need to learn to say no. Now, maybe Rory was saying that for himself as much as anything else, in the hope that he can stick with him. Was that your sense as well over the past week, that actually this guy's now a superstar you're dealing with, and you're going to be dealing with not a different character, but maybe different stresses and different strains over the coming months?
I think he had a good amount of it going into this week. I think he was more or less sort of joint favourite. He knew that the press needed a lot of his time even going into this week. So, I don't think he was that much under the radar this time. I mean, the other times, yeah, but this time I don't think he really had that. Like, everybody talks about the chip on his shoulder. He knew he was one of the favourites. So he was out playing with Tiger and Frankie in the first two rounds and all. So it wasn't like he was totally, nobody was talking about him this time. So, and it was kind of the first time with made it, you know, there was a lot of demand on his time with media, and I don't think there could have been any more, to be honest. And he did it all, and then he went out and performed like that. So it'll be interesting for me as well to, you know, it's a new situation for him. It's a new situation for me as management, everybody, to be dealing with more or less sort of a superstar at the minute, you know. And he's never been one to be shy to turn down an interview. He doesn't have that many corporate deals, so his Mondays are sort of pretty free. He doesn't have any of the club sponsors or anything like that there. And
why is that? Why is that?
Well, he took... Well, he did the Nike deal, didn't he? And then, so then after that, he was sort of a free agent, and he got a bag of clubs that he liked, and he didn't think that, he thought he could make more money on the course with than actually signing something that he didn't want to use.
Nice, good on him.
He wanted that freedom to just use the best stuff. And, you know, I'm not saying that TaylorMade can't put in a bag of 10 clubs and the ball's no good, but he just liked the fact that he had the freedom to use whatever he wanted, and the best driver that came out, or the best irons, or the best wedges. I think he's five different mechs in his bag. And I said that the only way you're going to be happy is if you're playing good golf.
Yeah.
Start putting in different clubs into your bag, and you have a couple of bad weeks, you're going to start like, you know, and he sort of agreed, and his manager kind of agreed, and, you know, he's probably lost a lot of dollars off the course by not signing, but at the end of the day, he's a happy chap, and he's got a winning formula in the bag, and he's probably not going to change that.
Yeah, it's great.
And he's probably enough in his bank account now.
Well, yeah, he's doing
probably
fine.
Helped us. That probably helped as well.
He's winning 4 out of 8 majors. He's doing fine.
Yeah,
lastly, if he doesn't win at Portrush, that's your fault, I would say.
I'd say so, yeah. Pete's better around there than I am, so we'll have to get him out for a practice, right?
Yeah. I'd say he'll be taking different lines off the tee.
That's somebody said that to me there the other day. He's got to have a chance at the... And I said, he's hitting it in the places I've never been. So,
we're there in two, where he's there in one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe not you, but definitely me.
Listen, keep it going. It's great to see the Irish link to this unbelievable story. So, look, enjoy it. As you said, I mean, the money is great, and what it does for your career is great, but you're kind of involved in something historical, and, you know, just to be a golf fan and be around all that must be amazing. So enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks, lads.
Cheers, Ricky. Thanks very much.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks again.
Thanks a lot, Ricky.
Ricky Elliott there. What a gentleman.
Mm. Oh, Ricky's a lovely lad.
Wow.
Absolutely lovely lad. Yeah.
I hadn't really heard him speak at length before.
Yeah. No, he's... And isn't it nice that, you know, he's been on a major winner bag 4 times now, and he can come on the radio and have a chat.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm.
Now, I suspect that Peter Laurie asked him help, but...
I was shitting it that he would actually come on. He's fucked up another one, so at least he did, so grand.
Brooks next week.
Brooks,
you get us Brooks. What are you at?
Brooks at the Irish Open. How about that? No, at the Open.
Are you announcing something?
Brooks at the Open.
But look, you should have picked that up a bit there when... You could have said to Ricky... Yeah, I've been up in Portrush 4 or 5 times over the last few weeks. I'm really on top of things. Could meet up with you when you land in on the private jet.
Yeah.
Could be your...
Show you a few bits.
No, we'll get him at the Open.
Okay, that'd be good.
Yeah.
God, it is amazing what he's doing. It must be surreal for Ricky Elliott as well. Clock's against us a bit. I didn't even get to all the tweets. Was there anything else pressing? Oh, a few people making this point. Stuart Armstrong. Rory doesn't play Texas Open the week before the Masters. Rory doesn't play Byron Nelson the week before the PGA. Rory says he's not playing the Irish because he wants to play the week before the Open. And then he did like a thinking face emoji trying to work that one out. There's a lack of consistency about Rory's preparation for these majors, I would say, in terms of playing the week before or not.
Rory does what Rory wants to do.
Amen. Altior. Lads, any thoughts on Rory not playing this week with the PGA Championship next week? Excuse for missing Irish Open was that he wanted to play the week before a major only.
Did he definitely say this?
I don't know. I don't know the exact what he said. Like, he may have said he didn't want to play 3 weeks in a row.
I think the big thing is he goes Scottish Open, Open, and then the
World Golf Championship,
and he doesn't want to play
4 weeks in a row.
4 weeks in a row, and then a week off and whatever. Just the Irish Open just sits at the wrong time. However, I think there's only one other guy, one other person who has been fit for the Irish Open and not played. And that was Darren Clark in Druids Glen. Every other Irishman has teed it up at the Irish Open. Without being injured. If they're injured, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know. So it's disappointing.
What about Rory at the PGA? Reversed into another top 10.
Exactly,
This was an incredible reverse into a top 10 because he did nothing and still managed to finish. Yeah.
35 putts on the Thursday.
Wow.
Thoughts on his performance? Did you see much of him?
I watched a good bit of it, yeah.
What did you think?
He was lucky to make the cut, wasn't he, in the end?
Shane Lowry finished tied for 8th.
Mm. Yeah,
he was talking about how he likes tough golf courses. He said Augusta may be a little bit different, but most majors are about getting out there, grinding your nuts off.
Yeah.
He said. And he said, I like golf where you need to go and battle it out. It's a bit of a return to form to Lowry now. That consolidates the win in the Middle East.
Correct. Yeah, very much so. Good. See, went to a golf course where you have to drive it very well. Which he is a very good driver of the ball, and he had to hit it straight. On a good week, he hits it very straight, and look, he's
And step aside here for a moment, Peter. I don't know if you know this, Nathan, but Jordan Spieth's back.
Number one strokes game putting.
By a distance. He gained 7 strokes in the field at one point.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm delighted. Absolutely delighted to see him back.
Did you notice he could only hit a draw on the Pro Tracer? I mean, he literally had, he just got his game to a point where I've got one shot here. It's a draw every time.
Stick to it.
But I mean, that is the mental resolve and intelligence of the guy, that he went out there with just one swing, so be it, and then he put the lights out. So he said he's worked harder on his game in the last 5 months than he's ever worked on his game.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's ever any doubt that Spieth isn't going to get every little ounce out of his talent and whatever.
His considerable more, talent.
That little bit of talent that somehow got him three majors.
Hold on a
that
second,
he managed to fluke his way to three majors.
Three majors, absolutely. I told you, once his putting went, he was struggling. He was an average player without his putter. Have I proved right?
Well, you see...
No, it's a yes or no.
It's a big part of the game
yes
to say
no.
Without his putter. You know, it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Come here. What are we looking at in Koepka here now? Because I was firmly on the Brooks Koepka train early. Mm-hmm. That second US Open, when I thought, oh my God, the way he destroyed Dustin Johnson in that final round and made par from all sorts of tricky places, I thought, this guy is going to be a serial winner. What are we looking at here now, do you think?
I think we're looking at a serial major winner.
Not a flash in the pan, he's had his 2 year.
No, absolutely not. No. Okay. No. He hits the ball far too well. Like he does nothing wrong. Mm. He doesn't look like to have a weakness in his game. Mm. And he doesn't look like to have a weakness in his personality. There's no obsessive compulsive nature in his personality that we look at. Mm. I don't know whether you saw on Twitter, it looked like he was having an argument with the wife on the Sunday morning.
Beforehand.
Did you see that?
I wouldn't have said it was the most warm celebration in 18 either.
No.
I thought there was a stiffness
was
across the Koepka.
Yeah, I was going to mention the Ricky and I don't know better not.
I was showing it to my wife this morning, and no matter how many times you watch it, you go, that look on his girlfriend's face?
Yeah, she went to kiss him or something like that, wasn't it?
At first she kind of goes to put her arm around him and she backs off. And then it looks as though, now maybe everyone's got this completely wrong.
Yeah.
But it does look as though she sort of goes in to kiss him and he goes, not now.
Yeah.
And she literally...
didn't like it.
Oh, didn't like it.
Put on the fakest of fake smiles.
It is tough when there's a cameraman 10 feet from you backing off, walking with you. Like, how do you behave? Maybe he didn't want... Maybe he's like, I don't want to do this in front of the camera.
See, and some of them have ruined it. Like, some people are... Brooks Koepka may not be comfortable with public displays of affection.
Totally.
And that's totally fine.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Ricky Fowler and Jason Day have ruined it for everybody. Probably getting it on the side of the green. Dear God, come on.
Get a room.
Yeah.
Get a bunker.
It's hard to know where this stops. I was like...
What do you think?
When you look at his game, like he is the... what sort of quote... the Pirates of Penzance, he is the very model of a modern major champion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everything about him suggests that all these tough courses, and because golf is flipping, they want to make these major championship courses, these type of tests, rather than having it at Hilton Head and having it very interesting, you'd have to imagine most courses will suit him down to the ground. He's proved now he can play Augusta this year. Doesn't have a great record at the Open, a couple of top tens.
No. Remember last year he had one or two terrible holes which kind of ruined him. But I wouldn't, you know, I can't see any reason he wouldn't.
Well, again, like you finished 10th at St Andrews, you get a nice 4 days at St Andrews where the wind doesn't blow.
Yeah,
it's going to be straight down his alley. It's probably not a good thing, I think, for golf that he doesn't win other events. So, like, one of the reasons I think why he's not and is only now becoming this superstar and everyone recognizable outside of golf fans is that he does nothing in regular tournaments. So a lot of, like Jordan Spieth, remember the time he chipped in from the bunker?
Yeah.
And there's a celebration. Like, that's just a normal tournament. He has this body of work that people see him. They know if they tune in on a Sunday night when Spieth is playing well or McIlroy's playing well, they'll be there. Like, are we going to see much of Brooks Koepka contending from July to next March?
Maybe not. You could argue, though, that the casual fan only watches the majors.
Perhaps, yeah.
They've had their fill of them now in 4 of 8, which is ridiculous. I was like, again, just listening to a billion different podcasts across the week, so I can't remember who said it. But somebody was saying, no, I don't like him. He's one-dimensional as a player.
Oh.
And I thought...
I think he's incredibly likable.
Yeah.
Everything about him. I like his game and I like his personality.
This person was saying his game is one-dimensional.
Yeah.
But I thought he's got all the... like, he's got great recovery shots. I thought... Now, he's not hooking the ball like Bubba Watson, obviously.
He doesn't need to.
Well, yeah.
Like, he doesn't hit it into the crap that, you know what I mean, that others...
I think that was almost his efficiency has gone against him. He doesn't have to He doesn't have to hit many recovery shots.
Well, he also, last week, and meant to ask Ricky about this, like, he also seemed to be off the tee playing at 80%. that actually he wasn't the longest driver in the field, that he was playing very, he knew how far he can hit it, and he knew that actually I can hit it at 80% here, and he was 15th or 16th in driving distance.
He was one of the few that could get it out of that rough. Mm. Is that just strength?
Pure strength.
Yeah. See, that's where, again, the poor old Zach Johnsons of the world are being killed by that type of course.
Yeah.
Like, maybe, I don't know, in terms of how they set this thing up.
They have to have a perfect week.
Just felt like the Bomber was destined to win that week.
Bombers are destined to win most weeks.
Fair enough.
It's as simple as that, no matter which way the course is set up.
Okay.
Like, they can set up the golf course like they did there, or they can set up the golf course easy. Bombers are destined to win.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know what I'm looking for. I guess, look, if you hit it really long and really straight, what course doesn't suit you to a point? Right?
Final question, Peter.
Yeah.
Is Dustin Johnson the American Monty?
Sorry, Peter.
In what way? You're going to have to explain that one to me.
Unbelievably successful. Like, if you were to look at just PGA Tour events over the last 12 years, Dustin Johnson is comfortably the best player on the PGA Tour.
Right.
And he has one major. Massive underachievement. Put himself in contention at least half a dozen. He's now finished second in all four majors.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that interview. What does it feel like to be the bridesmaid in?
It's pretty funny. Yay!
Yay! he actually has a sense of humour, which is great.
He has a litany now of blowing up majors whenever the pressure is on.
Yeah.
He has no pre-shot routine.
No.
He just, and so when things are going well, he's going well. But when the pressure comes on, he feels it. He's not so dumb that he doesn't feel the pressure at
it
majors.
Is on the back.
His bro, I was just going to say, he needs to change his caddy.
Brother on the back.
Even that mistake into the green. Yeah. Look, I appreciate the wins, and you saw Koepka do it as well. But I'm just, like, his brother's reading his putts, and they don't. I don't know what's going on with them half the time.
Get him off.
Like, he is the great underachiever in majors in golf for his talent.
Yeah, I'd agree with you.
And it's he can't handle pressure.
No. He can win, as you said, other golf tournaments, but, you know, when majors come on board,
Yeah. Well, you look at where he was 2013, 24, he was probably about 26, 27 then, and it felt at that stage he is the coming force. Once he wins one, he is going to win five or six very quickly.
Didn't happen.
And even winning the one hasn't changed anything.
I felt the way he won that one, remember there was the messing with the rules and everything, Shane Lowry was in the hunt. I felt he was just so peeved off with that thing, it almost gave him a singular focus. But in the main...
The distraction worked for him.
Yeah, I'm just like, well, I'm just going to... These guys, he was just so angry almost. He didn't get nervous. He was just at it. But I've never seen him look convincing on a Sunday. The way Koepka destroyed him at the US Open that final round, he went to pieces.
And it can't be coincidence that he plays. Now, maybe it is. Maybe the conditions were so tough and he battled so hard and played so well for 15 holes that when he needed a little bit more energy, when he saw that he had a chance, there was nothing there. Mm. But it just does feel that it's too much of a coincidence that the second he had a chance.
Yeah. Patrick Cantlay at 16 at Augusta saw the leaderboard and went, uh-oh.
Oh, it's like slip it into reverse.
Now with DJ, it's stranger because he's been Ryder Cup in pressure. He has felt pressure and he's a phenomenal player, but there's just too much evidence now in majors on Sundays.
I'd agree with you.
I don't know how you fix that, though.
You can't. If you don't have it, you're not going to win it. You're not going to get it.
He needs a pre-shot routine. He needs a different caddy.
No, he has a pre-shot routine for sure.
Does he?
Yeah.
Is he sticking to it?
Well, it looks that way to me. Right. You know what I mean? There's not much that changes. But it's more a case of, I personally think, and I've said this about loads of players, is, you know, you need somebody on the bag whipping you into a...
I know. The image of Dermot Byrne whipping you.
Dear God, how many times can you say whip?
Stop saying
Ricky Elliott sitting in Florida going, what is going on here? Wait, is he going to stop saying whipped at any stage?
He literally
whips
me.
I'm not going to whip you. Because all he's thinking is, right, I need to word my answer correctly that I don't say anything about whipping.
You're such a
Koepka. I'm in America. This can be taken up the wrong way. I'm not sure about the translation. Final question.
Very kinky.
The listeners can come back on this as well. Joe.
Go on.
Who would you take at their peak, Rory or Koepka?
What's Rory's peak?
Say that. Four-week stretch in 2014 when he wins two majors and the World Golf Championship.
Like, Rory's a more stylish player. The swing is just gorgeous. It's just beautiful. More of an artist. Oh, I find it hard not to say Rory still because of the artistry. But I feel like Koepka is the opposite to Rory, and the biggest way he's the opposite to Rory at the moment is no matter what, he's going to try and get it done. He could turn up with a broken thumb and he'll just say to Ricky Elliott, we're getting this shit done. Whereas I feel like Rory is now turning up at majors going, oh, I should have turned up on the Tuesday. Oh, I should have turned up on the Wednesday. Oh, I didn't get this right. I'm juggling. Now I'm not juggling. I really care about it and I don't care about it. I think Brooks crumples all up that crap and just says, it doesn't matter. We're finding a way to do it.
I personally think Brooks has come the hard way. You know, he didn't get his card on the main tour. He came over to Europe. He got a card in Europe, went on Challenge Tour, did the Challenge Tour part, did the main tour part, then went to America, won.
Yeah.
And now he's on the American Tour, and now he's winning majors. So he's done his apprenticeship, and he's worked his way up, and he knows what hard work is, and he knows how to get there.
Mm.
Some players have just walked onto it, and everything's been easy for them, and then... So I would go for Brooks.
I'd rather have Rory's game, though. It's just the beauty of it.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think if your life was dependent on it,
right now, yeah.
And you were said, well, they're going out this Thursday to play in a tournament. I'd be like, well, look, Brooks going to give me a chance.
Yeah,
Rory could. Anything could happen
if the putts don't fall in the first three or four holes for Rory.
Yeah, yeah. Just, no,
it's all about learning and life and whips.
There you go.
It's a lot about whips.
So pretty much, I suspect we might talk a bit more about Brooks next week and this. What is on in the next couple of weeks? So the Maiden Denmark on, Eduardo Molinari is leading, and the Charles Schwab, they're over in Ben Hogan territory at Colonial. Justin Rose, who by the way has gone to pot. Even like the new clubs, the new clothes, his posture over the ball doesn't look as good to me. Rose, Spieth, Rahm, Fowler, Schauffele, Francesco Molinari, Paul Casey. It's a really good field this week, Colonial. We're being turfed out of here, so let's get going. Nathan Murphy, thank you. Peter Laurie,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
All my exes were